dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. We recently had an opportunity to talk to a woman of uncommon intelligence about a matter that requires, well, a threat briefing, I think, of the first order. She provides it brilliantly in her new book, China RX, Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. Her name is Rosemary Gibson. She is these days a senior advisor for the Hastings Center and a perspectives editor for the JAMA Internal Medicine Journal. She has appeared in various other capacities and has written extensively on other subjects, but we are particularly keen to find out from her more about what China is up to in cornering the market on pharmaceuticals and other therapeutic medicines and putting us in a position where we are incredibly dependent upon both their quality control for such products and their willingness to sell them to us. Rosemary Gibson, it's good to have you back. Thank you for giving us a full hour of your time to really drill down on this subject, which I can't overstate its importance. It's great to have you with us again. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Frank. I'm very happy to be here again.
Well, Rosemary, we touched on this a little bit when we spoke earlier, but just to set the stage for our listeners, tell us how you got into this racket. What prompted you to want to write about China RX and a bit about your background?
Sure, Frank. Thank you. Well, I was looking to write another book in the public interest on a topic of great import to our country. And I happened to come across an article in the Economic Times, which is an Indian newspaper. And there was a fascinating article describing, in the opening paragraph of this article, an Indian soldier on the border with China. And he happens to open up his medic bag. And he notices that he doesn't have any more of his antibiotics. And then he realizes that across the border are the people who are supplying the key ingredients for those antibiotics. So he's dependent on the adversary for his essential medicines. I thought, well, if that's happening in India, what about us?
And by the way, of course, the people across the border were very hostile to the Indians guarding that frontier. Lest we forget, there's been a war across that border on a number of occasions. So it concentrated his mind, and obviously this story concentrated yours a bit as well. Do you have a background in sort of medical issues and the like?
Yeah, I've worked in healthcare for a long time. I started at the American Enterprise Institute out of graduate school and made my way through various places, the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and put palliative medicine in the nation's hospitals. And now I'm an editor at JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, Internal Medicine Journal, and as you kindly mentioned, at the Hastings Center. That's a healthcare ethics organization up on the Hudson River across from West Point. And I stumbled on this issue, and I thought this is a really important one for our country, for our health, for our economic security, and certainly for our national security. And nobody else was writing about it, and I thought, well, let's do it.
Yeah. So you come at it from the perspective of somebody who has an appreciation of what technologies and medicines like those that we now depend upon the Chinese for mean to a healthcare system. You've written, for example, a book about the battle over healthcare and what Obama's health care reform means for America's future. You've mentioned you worked at the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which, as I recall, does a lot in this part of this battle space, and also at JMA. So what does your training tell you about the degree to which we depend as a 21st century society with an aging population at that on these kinds of medical technologies? I mean, quite apart from the provenance, is it the case in your experience and professional judgment that whoever supplies these sorts of therapeutic medicines and components for them, antibiotics, for example, penicillin even, has a very important role in our lives and well-being?
Sure. Our medicines are like food. Whoever controls our food supply controls us. And medicines fall in that category. And what we've seen is the narrowing, the centralization of the global supply of medicines in a single country, and whatever country it may be. That's a risk for the whole world and public health. It's not a good situation to be in.
Yeah. And in your book, RX, China RX, you talk about, you know, this is a very personal matter. I mean, a kitchen table kind of issue for many of us. I'm drawn to one of your chapters, What's in Your Medicine Cabinet? And you might just give us a sense of the likelihood that products that the Chinese manufacture are in most of our medicine cabinets, or otherwise, you know, a function of, well, as you say, the kind of food supply for a great many Americans.
I would say, Frank, that if anyone who's taken a prescription drug in the last 10 or 15 years, chances are very high that they've had components, including the active ingredients, from China. And what I love about this topic is that the China conversation is front and center now in our national dialogue, and that can be very distant for the average person. And this is a topic that brings the significance of that China discussion, makes it very personal, brings it home, and helps people understand geopolitics from what's sitting in their medicine cabinet. And when you're relying on that antibiotic to go after a superbug that you have or someone you love has, and you want to hope and pray that that product is what it is. And as we report in China RX, that isn't always the case, even for important medicines like that. The FDA went into a plant in China that makes the key ingredient in vancomycin. It's sold by a brand name company here in the U.S. And the FDA said in its letter that's public, we do have some public information here, which is good. It said to the Chinese company that your data system can't show whether or not the product that you're selling is safe and effective.
Wow. Rosemary, we have to stop for just a moment. We'll be back with more right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are visiting with Rosemary Gibson. And Rosemary, we're going to come back to the FDA and the like in a moment, but just to drill down a bit further on what on earth is going on here. Let me just ask you, you mentioned a moment ago that for some 15 years, we have been ingesting or otherwise taking aboard medicines that have been in whole or in part supplied by communist China. How did we get to such a state of affairs that in some cases the only source of supply, as I understand it, is Chinese?
That's right. There are two drivers, Frank. The first was back in the mid-80s with the generic drug law that many of us have benefited from, which allows, when patents expire, for drug products to be sold as generics at lower cost. And so companies were looking for cheaper ways to make them, and they looked east in China, where there's a lot of chemists. And the second big driver was opening up free trade with China in 2000. And we document in China Rx very clearly the sequence of loss of entire production capabilities in the United States for penicillin, for aspirin, for vitamin C. We saw the cascade of loss, and that continues to this day as China moves up the value chain. But those were the two main drivers. And then we're seeing more sophisticated behaviors with China forming cartels as a means of taking over entire markets.
That's what I was going to ask about, Rosemary, is to some extent this sounds as though this is self-induced, that we've just had American businessmen making decisions on the basis of nothing more than the bottom line, who can supply X most cheaply, or I guess RX, as the case may be, most cheaply. But to what extent did this, at least over time, entail predatory practices by the Chinese, essentially to do as they have done in industry after industry, in this country and elsewhere for that matter, to essentially snuff their competition, usually through unfair means, as I say. Was that operating in this case as well?
Certainly, American companies are looking for a cheaper way to make things, and we need to look in the mirror. We put ourselves in this situation. It was stunning that finding reports of how the outsourcing was occurring when there was no capacity for oversight and assurance of quality, not only by generic drug companies that were looking to go overseas, but even by some brand name companies. So this is on us that we allowed this to happen, and we're continuing to allow it to happen with companies in the West still investing millions and billions in research and development in China, which isn't going to last long, and as well as manufacturing. So we did this. We've done this largely to ourselves, and certainly China's predatory practices, intellectual property theft, technology transfer requirements have accelerated this and really threatens an entire industry in the United States.
Rosemary, so you're saying basically that the companies in question are not simply manufacturing various products for the American market in China. They're also investing, I think you said, billions of dollars in R&D in China, so that essentially this assures the future dominance of China in supplying both components for various medicines, as well as perhaps the medicines, you know, the finished product, the vaccines or the antibiotics or what have you. Is that right?
That's right. It's really remarkable that an industry that is so intellectually, its intellectual property is everything, that they're moving R&D production to China to serve that market. And as we all know, China does require that as a condition of selling in the Chinese market. But one would think that for brand name drugs, why don't we do the R&D here, make them here, and if China wants them, they should import them from the United States. But we're not seeing that.
Presumably that's, again, partly because they're cheaper to produce in China. And if the Chinese follow their usual practice, they're by definition cheaper because they will always underbid their competition, no matter what the actual costs are, right? But in this case, the companies, it seems, are, well, you said it yourself, you know, look in the mirror, complicit in the wholesale transfer of their intellectual property to willingly to the Chinese. If not, it's being stolen, I'm quite certain. But at the very least, some of it is being done through a willing investment in China so as to have access to that market, as you say.
It's so remarkable. I spoke to a gentleman last week who's the company's business, and privately acknowledged the enormous extent of theft of intellectual property and the harm that it's done to people here in the United States because of poor quality products. And yet it persists. It's really a remarkable situation that we find these companies are in and the situation they're putting their customers in.
Mm-hmm. And again, the consequences of this obviously depend to some extent on the nature of the thing we're relying upon. If it happens to be Chinese rebars that are defective, you could have, you know, buildings or bridges or other infrastructure collapse. If it's defective ingredients for medicine upon which people are desperately dependent, it could be a terminal problem, at least for those individuals, and a great hardship for those who are caring for them.
Yes, and for society, it could be catastrophic. There could be deliberate contamination that goes unnoticed. There could be withholding of supply, which would cause civil unrest to no end. And when we lose control over supply, we lose control over price. And we're at China's behest and become a price taker.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever it costs, you'll pay it for. But so let's turn to this question about quality control. What is the mechanism for the FDA to oversee and assure the quality of the supply of drugs that are being manufactured elsewhere? You mentioned this one story where they kind of had a letter about that. But is this a enormous problem or just an episodic one?
This is an enormous problem, and it's out of FDA's hands. It's so significant. The FDA was set up, and many of your listeners will remember the time when our drugs were made here in the United States by U.S.-based companies and European companies, and the FDA was going in and inspecting plants here and in Europe and perhaps Japan. But now with globalization, the complexity is multiplied a hundredfold. And assuring quality from countries that don't have the culture that grew up here in the United States and created what I think is the world would agree is the gold standard for manufacturing and oversight, and a culture that we just would never let something out of the factory if it wasn't perfect, because people's lives are depending on it. And so what the FDA is dealing with and what we're all dealing with is a culture in China where just 10 years ago, Frank, think of this, the head of the counterpart to the FDA in China was executed for taking bribes for approving worse than substandard products. It was only about 10 years ago that the industrial chemical melamine was found in pet food and killed the pets of thousands of Americans, cats and dogs. This was a prevailing culture, and of course the infant formula was contaminated with the same industrial chemical melamine that was apparently limited to China. So if you have that kind of culture, and some of your listeners will remember that explosions in Tianjin City, the port city, that lit up the sky, and that was because a chemical warehouse was housing chemicals in ways that were just would never pass muster in this country. And what happened? The FDA found hydrogen cyanide contamination in drug shipments coming to the United States. That was part of the chemical brew that rained down upon the city, including the pharmaceutical companies that were located there. So how can you regulate that? How can you protect the American people when you're dealing in an environment that is so contrary to the system in which the FDA was created? It's out of its hands.
Yeah, well, and there's no accountability. But I guess just at the first level. Is anybody rigorously and comprehensively inspecting these drugs when they come to the United States?
The FDA, beginning in 2012, finally had authority and resources to inspect plants in China and set up an office there. But it has not been easy. The Chinese government refused visas for additional FDA employees to be located in China and make it easier for them to do inspections, so they faced that headwind. There are cases when Chinese companies do not allow FDA inspectors in, and the FDA now has authority to ban all products from companies that deny inspections. But there's something deeper here, Frank, and it's, I'll call it the practice of deception.
Mm. Rosemary, before you go there, let's pause, because that's a topic that I want to make sure we get into in considerable detail. Right after this, we'll get into much more detail on several of these points. We're back. We are speaking at length with Rosemary Gibson, the co-author of China RX, a fascinating and deeply distressing account of the dependence of the United States on communist China for a tremendous amount of its medicines and critical antibiotics and penicillin and even vitamin C. And she's described for us how we got into this fix and what really some of the implications are. Rosemary, I did want to just pick up, though, on the point you were talking about, which is especially alarming, this practice of deception, as you call it, and how that impinges upon the ability of those who are supposed to keep us protected from bad drugs, their ability to do so.
Thank you, Frank. Well, most recently, and some of your listeners may have been affected by this, it was a number of blood pressure medicines, one of the most common medicines used in the United States, that was found to be tainted with a carcinogen that shouldn't be there. And that happened because the manufacturer in China changed the manufacturing process, was not truthful to the FDA about it, and as a consequence, put a lot of people at risk. The risk is low for cancer, but it's still there. This is evidence of the practice of deception. We saw this 10 years ago with a commonly used blood thinner, heparin, where a lethal contaminant was put in, and that clearly was associated with the deaths of untold numbers of Americans. So that practice of deception is very, very troubling when it comes to something such as this, and it has implications for our national security as well.
Yeah, I want to come to that in a minute, but just a quick question on that, Rosemary. Is it your sense that people in China are deliberately injecting these sorts of toxic substances in? You mentioned one sort of accident, but some of it doesn't seem as though it could possibly be explained by simple incompetence or corruption. What do you think?
It's a combination of economic motivation to find a cheaper way to make something. Second is some incompetence and lack of professionalism. But it points to the possibility that there could be deception, as we have with counterfeit drugs coming from China. That's certainly deliberate deception. And we want to keep that away from the legitimate legal supply chain. It certainly shows the potential. And this goes on for years undetected here in the United States in the legal supply chain. That's also what's troubling.
Yeah, and as you point out in your book, good luck with trying to sue anybody in China for what they're doing. But Rosemary, to this point about national security, one obvious problem is that if our military is dependent upon China, well, as far as I'm concerned, for anything, it's a mistake, but especially for medical supplies, that can profoundly affect both the people who are supposed to protect us as well as the rest of us, no?
Absolutely right. So we spend billions on the state-of-the-art nuclear submarines, but the men and women in them, they are dependent on the adversary for important ingredients in antibiotics and other essential medicines, and you could degrade those and without much effort really hamper our U.S. military.
Let me ask you about one of the mechanisms through which the Chinese are sort of perpetuating this situation, dire as it is and ominous in the extreme, is through cartels. You talked a little bit earlier, Rosemary, about essentially taking down both our industry and I guess that of other nations as well in the pharmaceutical space. What role do cartels play and how aggressively are the Chinese using them for that purpose?
Well, we have a great case study in China Rx of the vitamin C cartel, and I can imagine that this was a test case for China to see how far it could get in the using the U.S. court system to legitimize its cartels. Briefly, there was a handful of companies in China that formed an ascorbic acid cartel, vitamin C cartel, that controlled export volume and controlled prices, and they drove out Western competitors. And the point that they argued in federal court was that our companies can't be held to U.S. antitrust law because, as a matter of Chinese law, the companies were told to form a cartel. So they can't abide by the laws of two countries. So that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court sent it back to the Court of Appeals, and we're waiting to see what the Court of Appeals does. But if it hadn't gone to the Supreme Court and that decision, which, by the way, happened in the current administration, prior administrations had done nothing about this. Think of it. It would have legitimized cartel behavior for everything China sells to the United States.
Yeah. Well, we're not out of those woods, as I understand it. I mean, if the appeals court doesn't find against them, I assume that unless it goes back up to the Supreme Court, there'll be essentially that outcome, would there not?
It would be a terrible outcome for our free market system, and I will say I haven't heard a peep out of free market advocates. Where are they?
let me just ask in that regard, Rosemary, you've talked about this problem, which, as I said earlier, seems to me to be, in a microcosmic sense, a symptom, if I can use that expression, of a much larger state of affairs with respect to the Chinese and how they do business, and what our friend Kevin Freeman, on whose terrific program Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman you recently appeared, and I commend your interview there to all of our listeners. You can find it at economicwarroom.com. But Rosemary, there are those who will instinctively respond to our drawing these kinds of conclusions as evidence of, well, I don't know, China bashing, I think it's often called. How do you respond to that sort of criticism that you're making mountains out of molehills, that the Chinese have actually proven to be very reliable suppliers, and as long as they're willing to sell, there's really no problem with this great global marketplace in which we simply will get the benefit of products at a very low cost?
I felt the need to address this point in China Rx, Frank, and the turning point for me and the answer came from hearing of the U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission. So there was a compelling testimony about 2 years ago up on Capitol Hill, and a gentleman described how he had been asked by 20 different industries in the United States to come in and do a forensic analysis of some patterns that they were observing. And he documented for these industries state-sponsored and supported criminal cartels using cyber-enabled espionage and sabotage to execute industry-wide fraud, market manipulation, antitrust behaviors, with the intent of disrupting, dominating, and displacing these industrial sectors that are the future of America. And the pattern that he outlined is also observed in our medicine industry, our pharmaceutical industry, So this is not just bad trade deals. It's not just currency manipulation and theft of intellectual property. We are at risk of losing the heartbeat of an entire industry that we rely on for quality of life and life itself.
In terms of the larger story here, Rosemary Gibson, as you've looked at the pharmaceutical industry, is it fair to say that the Chinese government has been engaged in similar practices on a host of other things upon which we depend? Rare earth minerals comes to mind. The cornering of the market, the development, if you will, of cartels, the use of government resources, including, I think, almost certainly intelligence assets, and certainly the power of the government's state-owned enterprises to essentially place much of the world in a position where it has to have access to China's sources of supply of these things, which are important for all kinds of modern technologies and applications. In other words, this is part of a general approach that is it's not China bashing to point out. It is raising a perfectly reasonable and legitimate and much needed alarm about the extent to which we've put ourselves in a position of dependency that could prove to be, as you've described in this case, but on so many other counts, not only of grave concern to the security of the United States, but also to the well-being of its individual people.
We saw with the rare earths that China was more than willing to use its virtual monopoly over essential commodities as leverage in geopolitics. And with medicines, we're even more dependent. And it's also been the case, Frank, that the Chinese government has threatened the U.S. government on at least one occasion that I've been told with drug shortages if the United States doesn't do what it wanted in a particular circumstance.
So this is where we are, folks. We are currently exceedingly vulnerable to contamination and perhaps disruption of supply, certainly extortionary price gouging at the hands of a country that is increasingly making no secret of its hostility towards us. We will finish this important conversation with Rosemary Gibson.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back. We are visiting for this full hour with Rosemary Gibson. She is an extraordinary researcher, analyst, and author on topics that matter to all of us, whether we know it or not, whether we're thinking about it or not. And in particular, she has rendered a singular public service to my way of thinking with her newest book, China RX, Exposing the Risks of America's Dependence on China for Medicine. Rosemary has completed this important public service by offering a 10-point plan in her book, China RX, for fixing this grave and growing vulnerability. And Rosemary, if you could, in the next few minutes, just give us sort of the highlights of what we as consumers, we as the, you know, people who elect our representatives and hold them accountable for looking after us, can do to try to remedy this dire situation.
Frank, I'm sure you're aware that we had an executive order asking the Defense Department to conduct a thorough assessment of its vulnerability on strategic competitors in the defense industrial base. And that report has come out. And it certainly shows the significant dependence on China and other strategic competitors for essential components and military equipment. I think we need to do the same thing when it comes to our manufacturing and supply of essential medicines for civilian and military use. I think we need an executive order to bring together the FDA, Department of Defense, Homeland Security, Veterans Affairs, and establish actually a permanent capability in the federal government like we do in Department of Agriculture for food and Department of Energy with regard to energy supplies. We don't want to be without those, and we certainly don't want to be without medicines. But we don't have any kind of capability now in our government. It's no one's job to know who controls the supply of our medicines. That needs to change.
Yeah. Do you have a candidate for who that should be?
I don't. This is a dialogue that has to emerge, and it should start with an interagency coming together, because no one agency can do this presently. It has to be a combination of perspectives. FDA doesn't have the Homeland Security and Department of Defense perspective, and vice versa. So the first thing we need to do is an interagency working group to identify where we are vulnerable, not just for the finished drugs, but their active ingredients, the chemical intermediates to make them, and the raw materials. We need to set up and recommendations for where we should house a capacity for a global forecasting of supply and demand so we don't run into shortages. And country risk assessments and supplier risk assessments. That's job number one. A second step is, as part of that interagency group, to make recommendations to for how we can diversify our supplier base, whether it's through partnering with other countries that are allies, or in targeted in very high for very high priority medicines, should there be incentives for domestic manufacturing, and if so, what would that be? So those are the two main areas, and I think that can be accomplished most easily and readily with an executive order.
Yeah. So understanding which medicines, if interrupted, would pose an immediate danger to public health is another of your recommendations, and that seems pretty self-evident. And examining these Chinese cartels and what they're up to and what they might do if they chose, presumably the behest of their government, to interrupt our sources of supply. How would you go about investigating that?
This is part of the capability that needs to be established to understand who is supplying our medicine, who controls those companies. And there are some companies that make medicines for the legal supply chain, and at night, they may be using their manufacturing process for counterfeit drugs. So we need deep intelligence on this, Frank, to understand that market. It's not transparent, as you can imagine, but we need deep knowledge of this for protection of our military and our civilian population.
But again, it just doesn't compute that we could put ourselves in a position where even people that, let's say, the FDA has gone in and inspected their facility during the daylight hours is generating phony drugs with the same equipment in the night hours. And as you say, it can't be the case that our military must find itself dependent upon the Chinese. Is there any evidence that the Defense Department, having done this study on the defense industrial base, is seized with this problem?
Looking through the report, it's unclear. There's no evidence that it has addressed the pharmaceutical aspect of its dependency in that Defense Department report. And so that is why we need this separate capability interagency group working on this from the perspective of our defense, the men and women in our armed forces, but also for the civilian population. Because the Defense Department gets its medicine just the same place where the rest of us get our medicine.
Everybody
from.
Else. Right. And Buy America is a term that has been usually deprecated by the free traders and the globalists. And again, there's nothing wrong with free trade, but there are certain things that if you find yourself doing what we've been doing in this case, not only isn't it free trade, hence the cartels, but it's not sound policy either. And this raises the further question, doesn't it, of strengthening government oversight of drug manufacturers, both here and abroad, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the logical extension of free trade is, well, we might as well buy our nuclear submarines from China. We might as well buy our fighter planes
from
China.
Don't go talking that up. There will be people who insist that that's a cheaper way to do it.
And is that really make sense? And if you poll the American public, you know, only six, there was a poll done of Americans, when it comes to medicine, do you trust China to make your medicines? And about 95% of people don't. So there's
reason.
The common sense norms of the public that's contrary to that more globalist view.
Well, this is the point. I mean, it is just common sense, isn't it, Rosemary? You've got to have both rigorous regulatory arrangements for American companies, and we mustn't, as you say, cede that regulatory responsibility to people who are either corrupt, and I have to just tell you, my own feeling about it is corruption is certainly part of it in China, but I think there's also a malevolence that's at work. I just can't believe that the Chinese government isn't fully capable of exploiting, if it hasn't already done so, this vulnerability to do what they've made clear their intent on doing to us, which is harming and ultimately displacing us. You talk also about FDA testing of medicines and identifying problematic products rapidly. Very quickly, your counsel on those two items?
Given the situation we're in, I think that we need independent testing of our prescription drugs, particularly generics, and having that information publicly reported. I'm not sure if the FDA can do that job, but we need a consumer reports type entity to ensure that our generic drugs, which are increasingly moving to Chinese production, and I think China will overtake India eventually because it has the industrial policy and the resources to do it. I think we're going to need some independent testing of our medicines and have that information in the public domain.
Sounds right to me. And as you say, identifying the products that don't measure up very, very rapidly. Rosemary Gibson, we are hard out of time so fast. It's just flown by. There is so much more to talk with you about, and I hope we'll have a chance to visit with you again soon, and in particular that you'll come back to us with updates on how we're doing on getting an executive order out of the government to evaluate and adopt, hopefully, your 10-point plan. Thank you for putting it forward so elegantly. In China RX, exposing the risks of America's dependence on China for medicine. Keep up your good work. And again, folks, check out Economic War Room with Kevin Freeman for a wonderful video featuring Rosemary. I hope you'll be back to us again very soon, and that the rest of you will be back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.